David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hi, this is Stacey Chalemi, founder of The Complete Herbal Guide, and today I'd like to introduce a very special guest of mine, and his name is Pushprendra Mehta, and he is a writer, storyteller, and mentor focused on providing situations to problems spurred by power of spirituality, karma, observation, perception, and intuition. And he is the author of the best-selling book, Observe to a Mask, 100 Small Things to Know People Better and to Encourage Self-Observation and Self-Improvement. But before we talk to Pushprendra, I'm just briefly going to put a shout out to our sponsors. And our sponsors are Resync today. And Resync has a great product called Resync Recovery. Resync Recovery supports the blood flow and circulation. It's the number one nitric oxide booster taken by professional athletes. It helps address inflammation and it positively impacts inflammation, and it also helps you recover energy. And their other product, Resync Collagen Peptides, supports circulation and strengthens every layer of the body. It contains ingredients like vitamin C and mineral copper to build collagen and reduces muscle soreness, and it also supports joint mobility and comfort. And I'd like to thank them. And if you are interested in their products, you can find them on resyncproducts.com. Now, Pushprendra, why don't you tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do so everyone gets to know you a little bit better?
Thank you so much, Stacey, for inviting me and for the generous introduction. You know, very little to say after the way you introduced me. But if I had to, if I had to sum it up, as you mentioned very eloquently, I am a content creator, writer, storyteller, and a person who is more focused on solving problems, providing solutions to problems through. Primarily through content creation, through conversations, to anybody who comes to me for advice, and also trying to make sure that we don't just have a positive mindset, but a mindset that is focused on self-improvement, self-reflection, which is why I have these two dictums, which is that to do all of that, it's important to speak less, query more, listen intently, feel deeply. And one of my dictums that I mentioned in a novel of mine called The Suitable Inheritor that, you have read, I know you've read, and is the fact that I believe in it, which is that if you have to live life, try and pursue your passion, work with your intuition, learn as a child, and adapt as water, which is what I try and do. And I'm focused inwards. And, I also enjoy the external world. But the idea is to always keep, is to observe yourself, as I've mentioned in the Wall Street Journal best-selling book of mine, Observe to Unmask, 100 Small Things to Know People Better, is that before you observe other people, the idea is to observe yourself, encourage self-observation, and to know yourself. Once you know yourself, you can know others better.
And a lot of times I find, that I think one of society's biggest problems is that majority of society, they focus on other people's flaws instead of focusing on themselves. So it's very easy to avoid ourselves by looking at other people and looking at their flaws and pointing it out and criticizing others. But yet people have a very hard time going within themselves and looking at themselves, finding out who they really are as a person, and honestly looking at their strengths and their weaknesses, and then trying to improve themselves, because it's very easy to point the finger at somebody else, but to look at ourselves and to actually fix ourselves and come to terms that we are not perfect individuals and we have specific flaws is a very hard thing, don't you think?
You hit the nail on the head. I couldn't have summarized this as well as you have. And, if you actually, from what you've just mentioned, you draw out a very important point, which is that most of us have an answer for other people's problems, other people's challenges.
Yes.
You know, very easy to, you know, offer advice. Takes half a minute to do that. We've not even listened to somebody complete their sentence. And in our mind, we've already formed, you know, the answer. But
yes.
if that's the case, why can't we find an answer to our own problems? Yes, there are some problems that are very grave, which are very difficult. It could be a health problem. It could be, you know, a psychological issue. It could be a financial issue. Some issues are difficult. You
yes.
don't get an answer right away. But by and large, a lot of our answers that we are not able, that we're able to find an answer for when it comes to other people, we are not able to do it with ourselves, is because of the inability to change. Because change requires you to, as you rightly mentioned, you have to observe yourself. You have to watch your words, actions, thoughts, beliefs, and habits. You have to be very open to, you know, addressing and first understanding, acknowledging your weaknesses and vulnerabilities and doing something about it. If you're
right.
not prepared to do that, very easy to go and offer advice,
yeah.
but the change is not going to happen in your life, and that regardless of which part of the world you live in, regardless of the, you know, your academic pedigree, regardless of the organization you work for, or even if you're a celebrity, you know,
right.
there are times they just, you know, people just stop changing. So yes, you're absolutely right about that.
And I think a lot of times too, you know, people fear change, and they don't, they are afraid to change because they don't know what to expect, or they're the fear of failure, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, you're so right. The fact that I see, you know, when I'm talking to you, I see so many little wonderful books behind you. Now, whether it's the Positive and Gratitude Journal, Empowering Yourself, which is one of your latest books, it's Epilepsy. The fact is you took that risk of putting it out in the public domain without worrying about the consequences.
Right.
No book, no movie, no matter how big a bestseller it is, will always be loved by everybody. But the fact that you've put out content, you've put out, you're doing this podcast, you're making so much of a difference with everything that you have in your website. The fact that you're putting it out and you're not afraid of failure, or you've learned to mitigate your failure and yet make that difference. So the idea then is to say, okay, I may not be able to take away, you know, all the fear and the failure from my life, but let me start mitigating it. Let me start taking the small little steps to put out content in the public domain, to go and start, you know, getting onto the speaking circuit, to having a conversation with somebody informally. You may not be able to offer advice, but you may really be willing to learn. So when
right.
you start taking those small steps, sometimes people struggle to even have a conversation, leave alone even make the first remark. If you challenge yourself and you say, no, I'm going to do this, I'll make those small steps, then it's easy to go mitigate the risk and get onto the direction of addressing your fears, to make those changes, to observe yourself, and to make your improvements, and, you know, go ahead and do all the wonderful things that you are doing.
Right. You know, I love, you know, all the quotes that you had in the book. You really made, you know, you made people really think about the how to look at things from outside of the box. Instead, you know, people sometimes we come from environments and we are taught a certain way. But then, you know, your book gives you a whole different perspective of looking at things and observing people. And it not only observing people, but it makes you observe your own self, because you really have to know who you, before you can get advice and before you can tell people what to do, you really need to understand who you are as a person. And if you are able to give that person constructive advice, you know, then give the person constructive advice if they want it. I've come to the conclusion where,
absolutely,
you know, people don't always, if people don't ask for your help, they necessarily don't want your help. And sometimes, even though you mean to do well, it could reverse, I think, itself. And sometimes, you know, people have to fall in order to get up, and it strengthens them.
Right, right. So, you know, you said two very, very important things. One is know who you are. And the other is, should you go and offer advice when not asked for? And I couldn't agree with you more. I concur with you that, particularly, you know, if you don't know yourself, how can you know someone else? You know,
yes.
That's a question that something a lot of people know. So that concept of trying to know yourself, more importantly, making sure that you don't offer unsolicited advice. Because somebody asked me the other day, you know, this question that who is the person who can offer the best advice? And I said, if a person has not been through a lot in life,
mm-hmm.
if a person has not seen wounds, if a person has not seen ups and downs in life, You don't want people to suffer, but if there are not certain amount of peaks and valleys in a person's life, then it is, and one is to have the challenges and the peaks and the ups and downs, but to be able to turn your setbacks into a comeback, to be able to first go and reorient and change your life. Once you can do that, those are the people you want to go for advice, who have turned their wounds into, you know, wisdom, as Oprah Winfrey says, or who've been able to turn their setbacks into comebacks. And then you go to them, they'll be able to offer advice to you. You know that it will create an impact, as opposed to going to somebody for advice or offering advice which you yourself will not follow. If I offer advice to you and I will not follow that and I cannot walk the walk, and at the same time, if Stacey, you offer advice to me and I'm not willing to accept it, but I'm willing to offer advice to you, then I'm not the person to come to for advice. So the person, so you're right, you don't offer unsolicited advice, you offer advice, you allow people to fall, pick themselves up. At the same time, if people come to you for advice, the important thing is to give them the advice that you will follow, that where your words and your actions are aligned. And that's where, again, it, you know, as you rightly said, it starts from trying to know who you are, observe yourself. It's not a boring activity. It's a very interesting activity of observing yourself. Yes. You know, observing others is very important. But once you know yourself and you're focused on yourself, you're focused on your frailties, your ego trips, your good, bad, ugly, it becomes so much easier to understand, to get into people's mind and, you know, to connect. And then if you connect and you understand people's mind, the empathy, the compassion, the advice, everything is that much more cogent.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
I find also that people, you know, they go through, people can go through life for decades and they don't know what their true purpose is in life. They don't know who they are as a purpose, you know, person, and, you know, what their purpose is in life. Like, what would you suggest to these people who are trying to figure out who they are as a person? What tips would you give them to help them build that platform so they can figure out who they are as a person and what direction they should take in life?
That's a very good question. You know, so there are some people who pursue their passion. Some people make their passion their purpose. Some people try and find their purpose and then passionately work towards it. And then you said a lot of people, majority of people, lack the purpose. Because somewhere, I think you touched on this, somewhere that we are a product of our upbringing, our environment, our circumstances, our parenting. Yes. And, you know, that's a conversation. If I have a conversation with parents, I always tell them one thing. It's important, yes, to tell your children to, you know, become something in life, go get an academic degree, study, take this entrepreneurship, travel. Great. Right. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you need to instill in your children, I think that starts early, is that they must have a purpose in life. If they've not done that, they need to have a conversation with their kids. Similarly, kids who've not had that conversation with themselves or their parents, it's good to go pursue a material goal. It's good to say, I want to go after fame and recognition, or I want to make a difference. That's great. But the purpose, as you rightly said, is that something that makes you want to not just bring a smile on somebody else's face or, you know, improve your life, but that's something that impels you, that goads you, that inspires you, where that does not feel like work. You will get physically tired when you're driving towards something. So when you look back and you ask yourself that, why is it that there, you know, you have some of these spiritual tomes like the Bible, like, you know, the of other religions, the Bhagavad Gita and the Hinduism, for example. Yes. Or you have people who, you know, who we talk about, we quote 50 years later, 100 years later, different luminaries from different fields.
Yes.
You know, their houses have been turned into museums. Mm-hmm. People go to different parts of the world just to visit that.
Yes.
And, you know, if that can happen, that means they're spending money to find, you know, inspiration somewhere else. But why not become your own chief change officer, your own chief inspiration officer, by telling yourself, I want to do something which is purposeful, while I pursue my material goals, while I pursue the fame goals, something which, you know, if I leave this world, I even if I don't leave a legacy, which is a very big word to be remembered by, but something that, you know, where people will remember me by. If, you know, for example, I have this test. I've been to funerals and I've been to, you know, ceremonies, and I've seen that, you just look at the immediate family or you look at people and you sometimes see that, oh, you went there. People were, it was just a formality. Nobody had tears. People were just wanting to leave. They were looking at the clock and they were like, okay, you know, and you tell yourself, it's not about the people who attended, but the person who went away. Did that person not connect with people? Did that person not resonate with people? Did that person not give love? Or did that person not make some difference where people are like looking at the clock? They cannot even take, you know, think about that person for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes.
Right.
Say,
yes.
You know, you don't even have to cry, but you can have that expression that, you know, I'm missing the person. Or even if you are a person who is very evolved and you've been able to, you're very, very even tempered in both, you know, happiness and desolation.
Yeah.
But you know, the person is thinks very highly of the other person. So that all comes back when you have, you want this particular thought in your mind that I need to lead some sort of a purpose life, for life. I'll make, even if I can make a big difference, I can't be Martin Luther King or a Mahatma Gandhi or, you know, Abraham Lincoln, but I will want to make a small difference. Could be in my neighbor's life, could be in a cousin's life, could be in a friend's life. I think if you just start off with that, it'll become very easy to get onto a purposeful, purpose-driven and a passionate, zealful, you know, contributory, self-worthy life.
I think the biggest problem with a lot of people, especially in today's society, is people compare themselves to others, or they look on the social media, or they look on TV, and they see these make-believe personas of individuals because they're not like that in real life. They
Right.
just portray it. And, you know, people think they try to, especially the younger generation, they try to meet up to these people who they in visualized are a certain way, but it's really feeling self-accomplishment within ourselves that we shouldn't compare ourselves to others, but we should feel fulfilled and we should do things that make us feel happy and feel make us feel accomplished. For me, I feel like when I help individuals, that's a feeling of a special accomplishment, a feeling where I get more pleasure that I can't even begin to express in words. And I feel society really needs to not compare themselves to each other, but do things that are going to make their inner self happy. What do you think about that?
Again, I you're so right. I couldn't agree with you more, because, you know, the comparison creates discontent. If I'm compared with even a sibling, or a friend, I have no problems, I'm secure, compare me. But the point is that at some point in time, what is that comparison doing? When you compare even two kids, you're parenting and you're like, oh, this son, my son, oldest son has this, but my youngest son does not have this, or my daughter has this, but my son does not have that.
Yes.
So you are sending a message to them that this is right to compare. So that means the child will then turn around and say, oh, you're talking about discrimination, equality, inclusion in the corporate world.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But you're not practicing. So each of them are different. They are unique. A cannot be B, because if the population of a country is 300 or 350 million, you're talking about 3 or 350 million different minds.
Yes.
So if you don't want to breed insecurity, you don't want discontentment to, you know, to be a part of the larger community or family and otherwise, the important thing is to appreciate people for who they are. Everybody is unique. More importantly, let's say you want to compare yourself, then it's better to compare yourself with yourself. You know, just as you have corporate earnings, corporations have earnings, they look at the results every quarter. Why don't you measure your performance each quarter?
Yes.
Also, a quarter ago, I knew this much. Now I know more about cybersecurity. Now I know more about epilepsy. Now I know more about, you know, Stacey's book on empowering yourself for positivity and gratitude. What I knew a month ago, I should have read this book a month ago. I should refer this book to 5 other people.
Right.
So when you do that, you are bringing in gratitude, appreciation more than what you did 3 months ago.
Right. Yes.
You are sharing that with others. And more importantly, when even if you are comparing yourself with other people, you are growing. So that comparison, if you want to compare, it is healthy to compare, to strive not to become somebody else, but to emulate and take that positive quality of theirs and bring it into your life. If you don't know how to make money and Stacy knows how to make money, then go take her advice, because that's your vulnerability. If you don't know how to write and you want to write a book, then, you know, you can sit down and say, Stacey, you've been writing an article for Thrive Global, or you've been doing this for example, for HuffPost. How do you do this? How did you write your first article? What are the elements? If you want to speak, Stacey's on the speaking circuit. You know what, Stacey, how did you think of it? How did you muster the courage to do it? So if you want to compare yourself, have those conversations, reach out to the people who are like us, like you and me, who may seem like, oh, they made it. Well, they made, you know, they, like I, you know, I told you, they took that risk of putting themselves out in the public domain. They said, we are work in progress. We'll always be work in progress.
Right.
So if you tell yourself you're always work in progress, if somebody compares you with somebody or you compare yourself, then, you know, you will just want to tell yourself, I will compare myself because I have to move from good to great, not for anybody else, to move from being ordinary to extraordinary. I have to get better. I have to measure my performance, and every quarter I must improve in, you know, X, Y, Z, whatever you set out for yourself, whatever goals. That, I think, then will make for healthy comparison, whether it is comparison with others, and more importantly, comparing yourself with yourself.
And I think one of the main points that you mentioned, you said this earlier in the beginning, you know, people focus on the monetary amount of what they're bringing in instead of thinking about their performance and thinking about where they learn, you know, what they learned, you know, 6 months ago and how they have expanded their mind and their abilities 6 months later. You know, in our society, especially in the United States, you know, everything is the dollar bill, the dollar bill, the dollar bill, but that defeats the purpose. That's not what really is important. And if we could get people to really realize that it's not always about the money, it's about self-achievement, self-worth, that I think it really matters to build a person's strength, courage, wisdom, hopefulness, and to get them to the point in life where they will fulfill success and they'll fulfill happiness. What do you think?
You're absolutely right, because, you know, if money is the only goal you have in life, then you can make, you'll obviously at some point in time make a lot of money if you work towards it, or you inherit it if you're lucky, or you just win the lottery. Great. Wonderful, you know. But once you've got everything and you're driving the most expensive car and you're living in the most expensive house, or you are doing the most expensive, you know, let's say watches and bags and the most expensive accoutrements and money can afford, great. But you also need people to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, so if you have the money, you want to go and, you know, parade it around and show it off, you need people to be a part of that. So at the end of the day, you would know this better than I do. And I've studied this across the last 15, 20 years,
yeah,
across different parts of the world. When I observe or I've seen or I've interacted with some of the wealthiest people, you realize that money was a byproduct of them. They pursued excellence.
Yes.
You know, this conversation that you said, self-improvement,
sure,
self-reflection, observation, wanting to get better, comparing yourself with luminaries only to get better, to go and meet them, get an appointment and say, you know, can you help me get better in this set?
Yes.
I don't know this. How did you do this? Hiring maybe a life coach, hiring a mentor, anybody you want to be with, being able to take advice that may seem tough to implement, may seem like, oh, this is tough and rude. It's direct on your face. It's not something which is couched with, you know, nice little sweet words.
Yes.
You take that and then you realize that if you pursue excellence, if you create excellent content, if you speak well, and again, you get onto that, eventually you become a very good speaker, you become a very good storyteller, you become an excellent marketeer, you become very good at what you do in terms of IT, engineering, cybersecurity, ESG, anything for that matter,
right,
a good teacher, a professor. And you're thinking, you will, ingenuity will start kicking in. You'll start thinking, oh, this is one way I can make money. Perhaps in the 1 hour that I waste, you know, on social media, barring trying to follow what other people are doing, let me take out 20 minutes from that and maybe understand what is investing. Or let me understand if I can have a side hustle. Maybe I can open an online store. Maybe I can, you know, if I start referring other people's books, or maybe as I start getting into the book review business, I can charge $25, $50, $100 for the book review. So when you start pursuing excellence, wanting to improve yourself, money will follow.
Right.
And that money with people, with relationships, with connections, with understanding knowledge and improving your knowledge level. So people, relationships, knowledge, and money. If people are your first focus, relationships and knowledge gathering and trying to improve yourself, if these are some of your first objectives, I promise you a lot of money will come your way. And that will then mean a fulfilled monetary life as opposed to just having all the money in the world. But if you
Right.
somebody peeks into your personal life, they're like, this is very empty. I don't want to be there.
Right.
I don't want to be leading his life or her life.
I've noticed that by speaking with many people of all different levels of wealth, and the people who have been very successful. They did strive for excellence. They didn't strive for the dollar bill and making money. Their goal, they had one specific goal, and it was to reach that level, and they kept climbing to try to get to that level. And it was the determination and the strength they had within themselves that got them to that level, and money did follow. But it wasn't, the money was not the pure objective. It was getting to that certain level that brought them there. And like you said, money came their way, but that was not their main goal,
Absolutely, very well said. And I in the last 10 years, there is a practice that I do, and I've shared this with a number of people. It's helped a number of people. What happens is we measure our life in terms of years or decades. Oh,
Right.
I'm going to be working for 30 years, 40 years, 25 years, or 10 years later, I'm going to get there, 5 years later.
Right.
But if you tell yourself that I'm going to measure my life with days and with months, not years. So if I've got a working life of, I want to work for say 20 years or 25 years or 30 years, 20 times 365 is 7,300 days. So if you measure the days and or months, then what you will achieve in 1 year, you will achieve that in 6 months.
Right.
And then your tendency will be to make every day and every month count. You work
Right.
for 2 hours, you work for 3 hours, or you work for 8 hours. You and I know people who will go to work, or they work remotely, or they run their own businesses, or they have a job where they can achieve something in 4 hours that other people will not be able to achieve in 8 or 10 hours.
Right.
Why is there that? It's not that they are smarter. It's just that maybe there is more practice there. They're good listeners. They're more attentive, more focused.
Yes.
So when you look at some of these attributes, focus, attention, self-worth, wanting to improve yourself, money is important, but I have a bigger goal. I needed to start a Google or a Facebook.
Yes.
I know in this first 6 or 7 years is going to be slow, but come 8th or the 10th year, it's going to be a jackpot. A
Right.
lot of these startup, people, a lot of people you and I know have thought about not just startup and anything they've done.
Yes.
Your first book may not be the bestseller, but you continue writing. At some point in time, even if it's the people who've not, made their book into a bookseller, a bestseller, but that book has, they made it very big in the speaking circuit because of that
Right.
one book. It's
Right.
the best marketing tool. Or the book has been adapted into a web series for that matter, or
Right.
maybe a movie or a documentary,
Right.
or they've used it to help people in terms of consulting. So
Yes.
I think at the end of the day, as you rightly said, that if your focus is excellence, if your focus is being the very best at whatever you can do and continuously are improving, honing, looking at different approaches, then it will lead in a very purposeful and actually a very purposeful, rich and wealthy life in terms of the monetary aspect and the non-monetary aspect.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Now, what made you want to write Observe to a Mask? What brought you to that idea that you needed to write this book? What was your main goal and incentive?
To be very honest, I have always been, I loved, as a kid, I used to love reading about Sherlock Holmes and Nancy Drew and Agatha Christie. Sherlock Holmes was my favorite character.
Yeah.
I read a lot. I always, and then I had a, I was raised in India. My parents were spiritual. So we always looked a little inward. So we were told, as kids, that you must be compassionate, empathy, be good listeners. Like I told you, speak less, query more, feel intently, listen intently, feel deeply. All that was there. But we were told that keep watch your words, your beliefs, habits, actions, deeds. So I think, and when that happened, I don't know, somewhere maybe as a teenager, I started to become conscious and used to observe people. And I, you know, if every time I got into a conversation or I saw other people talking to other people, and I used to notice body language very carefully, where if other people said something nasty or mean, or it hurt somebody because of a sarcastic comment, then I tell myself, I don't want to do that. Or they were personal questions. If somebody's had a divorce, you don't want to ask them why they've had a divorce.
Yes.
And at times, you know, asking somebody if the person has a child may be a tricky thing, because, you know, it may stir up something the other person doesn't want to talk about, maybe because they tried having a child, but they couldn't have one.
Right.
So all those things that were, to my mind, vulnerable about other people, that I observed that when somebody asked them that question, they didn't like it. I mean, you're not supposed to ask a lady her age, or not supposed to ask somebody her income. That's fine. You know, but the other thing, so I started to absorb those things. But I think, you know, there was a question which I mentioned in the introduction of the book, that there was a question that was posted on Quora, the website.
Yes.
What are the small things that can tell you a lot about people? And I posted my response, you know, that these are the 7 or 8 things that, you know, you want to figure out people instantly, this is what you can do. And that, again, is not judgment. It's come from my own observation about myself and my frailties, and helps me. That I didn't realize that blew up, and over a period it had 1 million views and several thousand upvotes and blah blah blah. So when that happened, you know, as a writer, you know that, you know, as a content creator, storyteller, feedback is very important.
Yes.
Again, inward looking. So I said, this is saying something to me, because in March 2019, when I posted that answer, a year later, it had touched over 1 million views, and, you know, Quora also promoted that answer. It's going, and then people would reach out to me and say, oh, you've said this, what does this mean? So I said, it was, you know, during COVID, when all of us were homebound, I said, you know, everybody's talking about masking and unmasking. You know, maybe there's a way to unmask ourselves right now, which is not the COVID, but from a long-term perspective. So I thought about writing, you know, elaborating on how you can observe other people, more importantly, observe yourself.
Yes.
And so that, you know how to find the right partner, you know how to identify the right people to hire for a job. What about the people that you will get into a business partnership and realize later, oh, this was toxic, or people you want to keep a distance from, because, you know, you think they're negative and toxic. We, each of us, run into situations like that.
Oh, yeah,
so
definitely.
What are the red flags that you can begin to know very early on when you are dating somebody, and before you take that crucial decision of moving in with a person or getting married to that person? There are some red flags. And if you can identify that, 90% of the relationships that people are in, professionally and personally, are unhappy. People hate going to work. They don't like their supervisors. They don't like coming back home. Or the stuff that they liked about their spouses, they hate it now.
Yes.
Some of those things, you can't eliminate everything, but you know the red flags. So then you can work on it to say, and including yourself, oh, this will irritate somebody, this won't. So going back to the Quora story, when I realized that it's got over 1 million views, I think something needs to be done. This is feedback. So it took me around 4 to 6 weeks. I said, you know, I'm just going to write a book. Honestly, I thought I'd just put out a book which will be about 100 small things to know people better, to help people actually focus on themselves. I said, this is a time where people at that stage look like people are, you know, self-reflection, things are going to change, environment is cleaner. And so I got it, you know, I wrote it in 6 weeks, and then it got published. And then, you know, it did well and got onto podcasts. It became Wall Street Journal bestseller, blah, blah, blah. More importantly, it challenges me, because I am always, you know, every time, like you said, you know, there are stuff that you had this book by your bedside and there's some quotes in it.
Yeah.
More importantly, I have written it. I have to follow it.
Right.
So I make sure that whatever I've written that, particularly if parts that are negative, I don't become that.
Right.
Or I have to constantly tell myself, I've written this, I've told people this. Now, am I giving off the cues of being something like that to somebody else? So that's the advantage. So that's why, you know, that's the motivation to write this book. It happened, I mean, it's all providence and God's blessings, but it happened because of the question and answer and the feedback and the way it developed on Quora for me to then think about writing this book. And then, you know, everything, everything just happened and fell in place and started to, take different directions. So happy about the outcome, yes.
I am very happy about the outcome, because that book definitely deserved it. I loved reading it. It was just like I told you, even after I finished your book, I had it by my bedside. And at night, I would open it up to certain pages and I would just go through it to remind myself of certain things. because a lot of times, you know, even, you know, you would speak to somebody and what they're saying is not what their body language is saying. It's two different things. So, you know, the person is not truly being honest. Why aren't they being honest? It's not maybe because they're a dishonest person. It may be because either they're embarrassed of what, you know, who they are. They may have low self-esteem. They may not be afraid to admit to something. And sometimes we have to be sympathetic with that person. And, you know, and sometimes people are toxic and we do have to
stay away from absolutely that too. And you know you mentioned a very important thing, you know, at the end, which is that sometimes people are toxic. And you see, what happens is one of the cardinal objectives of this book is also the fact that, you know, when we're discussing what makes a lot of people successful, what makes leaders, entrepreneurs, very successful, very rich, and or some people leading very meaningful lives. And if you look closely, apart from self-reflection, self-observation, they read a lot, they have conversations, they work very hard. That's a given.
Yes.
One of the most important things is the fact that who are the people you surround yourself with? Who are the people you are spending most of your time with? Mm-hmm. Now, that's something a lot of people don't pay attention to. Even the times you interact with people in your family, extended family and friends,
yes,
you've had for 20, 25, 30 years, and, you know, and you sit down and sometimes you realize that, you know, some of the conversations they're happening, they're very different people, but the conversations that are happening is small talk around you.
Yes.
Or the fact they're different, there's nothing wrong, but they don't really fit into your scheme of things. So it's all right to hang out with them on and off occasionally, sporadically, right. But you know, if there's a way to wriggle out of it or reduce it, then the book Observe to Unmask helps you identify that. So the idea is, for example, if I had to identify my life partner, conventionally, I got married a little late than, you know, what it is. But I told myself, I'm not going to get married till, you know, for me, what works is conversation. So I said, it's something in which in marriages is not given that much of importance to conversation. 5 years down the road, 6 years down the road, you know everything about your partner. You go to a restaurant, you know, there's nothing to talk about, or you're only talking about your children, or you're only talking about that one topic. I didn't want that.
Right.
So for me, that was important. So for me, I said, I need a thinking woman.
Yes.
Now, that definition of a thinking woman for me would be different from somebody else.
Right.
So the person who I ended up marrying is a psychologist. So imagine she's a psychologist and I'm engaging human behavior. But it fell in place because, you know, we were not being judgmental. We knew ourselves and we said, okay, the idea about also Observe to Unmask is that if you figure out people and you know the red flags and you know this kind of person will not work for me. So when you form your deep bonds and friendships or any kind of relationships, not just marriage or dating, you know that these are the people you want to hang out with. These should be a part of your inner coterie. And as you get older, you become a little more wiser and selective.
Yes.
So the idea was also to make people more aware that this is a good time, and when COVID actually enabled us to spend more time with ourselves and our families. So there were people who had broken relationships, you know, who struggled to be at home, mental health issues. But the idea was that anytime you make these choices, you must be conscious of who you're spending your time with, and 100%. To know those people better, this book may help you do that.
And I also feel that, you know, there were times I had friends that were very nice, good-hearted people, but they were very negative. And when I was with them, when I talked to them on the phone, I felt drained because they sucked the energy out of me, if that makes sense to you.
Absolutely.
You know, and, you know, in that sense, they were toxic for me because, you know, all they had were negative comments, a negative outlook on life, and nothing was positive. Nothing was upbringing. And negative energy, really, it reflects and it affects the other individual. Their energy affects our energy because the world is, I think it's like 90% energy. Our world is run by energy.
Oh, absolutely right.
So, you know, their energy can definitely affect us as a person. That's why when you talk about Reiki or you talk, you know, Reiki, you know, people are like, oh, yeah. But it does, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
When you're around other people, you know, and I had to let go of those people, you know, just like you were mentioning.
And, you know, you're very important. Energy, vibes, feelings, they're extremely important. You may not be able to, one may not be able to express it in words or quantify it every time. So, you know, it again feeds into another very important aspect, which, you know, if you look at research or data or studies, you know, negative energies results in So if I interact with you and you find something negative about me, and occasional negativity, fine. But if you say that Pushpendra is very negative and you interact with me regularly, my energy, not only will my energy rub off you and influence you at some point in time, until unless you are a very positive person and your positivity can override my negativity.
Right.
But what happens is that my energy will result in your karma creation.
Yes.
So for example, if you sit down with me and I am indulging in small talk, gossiping all the time, or I'm indulging in, or if you see behavior which is, you know, full of temper, greed,
yes,
or you see people who are, you know, constantly complaining, criticizing,
yes,
or there is an excessive amount of insecurity in somebody,
yes,
so, or it could be any other negative trait, you know,
right,
then what happens is that what happens is a little bit of that can come to you. So when
yes.
that happens, karma is not just cause and effect, or as you sow in, so shall you reap, or for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. Yes. But karma is also a process of strengthening relationships or destroying relationships and careers. So if you are watchful of your words, habits, and actions and who you interact with, and you can feel, like you said, that there is a certain amount of energy, or like you said, Reiki, when you're giving energy or you're accepting energy from somebody, you kind of feel that the person sometimes is in a different space, or this person has a different, you know, bandwidth. So the energy leads to conversations. If the conversations are positive, uplifting, it will result in creation of positive karma. If you're caring, appreciative, full of gratitude, you are trying to help people, you are, you know, engaged in something which is purposeful, meaningful, fun, but not generally condescending. You know, you can have a sense of humor, but you're not going to be enjoying it in somebody else's cause. So if you engage in positive karma, the positive energy itself will envelop the room. If some people just walk into a room and, you know, they come in with a certain amount of positive energy and vibes, you sit down alongside somebody and you feel that, you know, I need to get up and go away.
So
the negative energy feeds into the negative karma, and that creates something I called, and I'm working on my on a book on a book of mine on karma, where I have this concept called karma currency, which is about, you know, like we have cryptocurrency, we have, you know, central bank digital currency, we have currency of our own, dollars and whatever, we deposit them in our account, and it, you know, it gives us an interest, it grows, even if it doesn't give us an interest, we have it in our account,
right?
So similarly, the negative and the positive energies result in the positive and negative karma growing, and then it has its ramifications and consequences. So if I have negative energy and I give it to you without even uttering a word, without even talking to you, but if I have negative feelings for you, I've created a negative karma. And guess
so,
what?
So, yeah. So
to summarize, so it's, you know, it's as if you and I are having a conversation one on one, whether it's remote or it's personally, and even if I have one iota of negative energy against you, that means that negative energy is not your fault. I may give that negative energy to you, and you can get up and walk away if you feel it.
Right.
You may not tell me about it, but if I have that negative energy or the negative vibe of you, I create a negative karma. That means, how can I reap a mango if I have sown or planted a thorny acacia tree?
So I really like the fact about the book that you're going to be writing about karma. It's very interesting. When do you plan to come out with that book?
I'm working on it. It's a bit of a longer project because it's, so most people in different parts of the world know the meaning of karma, including the US. They know what is karma, the positive and the negative karma, but they treat it more of a revenge or a reward.
Yes.
Or you hear this loose expression, karma is a bitch.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so karma is really nothing. It's a mirror. It is like, you know, if you play tennis or you hit a ball against the wall, it's going to bounce back.
Right.
So it's really that, but more importantly, more than knowing the definition of karma, what are the effects and consequences of karma?
Yeah.
That's very important. And then the questions are, oh, what are the different types of karma? Can some karmas can be cleaned or mitigated, positive or negative? Some cannot be, regardless of how enlightened you are, how evolved you are, how good you are. So I'm writing about some of those issues and also, you know, in the form of storytelling, back it with data and, I mean, not data, research and, you know, evidence, and also make it into something which is, you know, which should not be like, oh, this is extremely difficult for us to understand. It will be something which is not for everybody. It will be a little, it will be something that people may, at least people who believe in karma, who most of them who believe in karma, they will be open to it. But it's not that even if they believe in it, that everything they'll accept. But the idea is to get them to start thinking about being aware of it. Because at the end of the day, everything you pursue in your life, success, money, spirituality, growth, there is an effect that comes out of every effort you put in.
Yes.
Or every word that you put out into the universe, or that every action that deeds, habits that you are, you know, used to, good, bad. So what are the consequences? Because ultimately, even in business or in work and jobs, whatever you do, there is a consequence.
Right.
So then there's the office politicking. So the karma at your workplace and in your personal space with your relationships. And then there are some karmas, you know, you see people who are born into with bad health, for example. Mm-hmm. Or you know, you see people, you see parents who've lost their kids very early. Yes. Or you see estranged relationships. Or the certain amount of, you know, dysfunctional families. Or you realize people are narcissistic. All sorts of behaviors happen. And what is there? Is there some sort of a relationship with karma? And some people say, I never did anything wrong in this life. Why is this happening to me? Why me?
Right.
So answers around those questions also have to be given. I mean, people can accept it or not. That's their choice. But I thought it's a good time, you know, to work on it. So I'm thinking it'll probably be somewhere in 2024 where it'll get published. But this is going to be a little bit of a longer work.
That's very interesting. I really would like to read that when it comes out. That is very significant, I think, to many people, because people go through situations like that all the time. And most people have implanted in their head either good karma or bad karma. If you give out good karma will come back to you. If you give out bad karma, bad karma will come back to you. You know, it's what you put out in the universe that will come back to you. And that's what the main, most people have in their mindset is that, you know, because that's what they're taught in a lot of, especially in the European world. You know.
Absolutely. And, you know, the other facets is that while there is merit to it, there is importance with all of that. But the important thing is to understand with the cause, effect, the cause, and what is the cause. It's very easy to say this is the cause and this is the effect. This is the action and this is the reaction. Karma is where science and spirituality converge. It's very scientific. It's also got the spiritual and religious side to it. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say this religion is wrong or that is wrong. But I just want to say that something which people, the common man, everyday people like you and me can follow. It's not going to be something which is very lofty, which requires intellectualizing karma. It's something where if a person picks up a book, the person can say, oh, there is food for thought. I agree or I disagree. But let me just try. The idea is, again, like I mentioned, observe to unmask. You can disagree with me. You can term it as rubbish, but I would request you to try that facet that you read in Observe to Unmask. You know, there's one insight you may not agree with. Just experiment with it and see if it's right or wrong. Same thing with karma, experiment. Because with karma, the other part is that people think that the positive karma and the negative karma, you know, it's like a balance sheet. My profit will equal to my loss. If I do 20 good profit, good things, it'll negate my one bad thing. Well, both of them are separate. It's not like a balance sheet where liabilities will be equal to assets. Both of them will have separate consequences.
Right.
So that's one part. And the other part that does not get highlighted is that, and that I think is risky, which is that it's all right to say, I won't do negative karma. It's okay, I'll build up my positive karma. But when you get on to building your positive karma, so if I do something for you, then I want to go and announce it to 30 people. You know? And I want to announce it to 30 people in a room where you are there. So I make myself look more important than you.
Right.
And suddenly everybody's like, oh, Stacy made it because of what pushed it to help her. No, yeah. So what I've done is in some way there's the one-upmanship. It will result in my arrogance index going up, my ego going up. So whenever you are, this is just one example, whenever you're engaging in a positive karma, you don't want the positive to turn into a negative.
Right.
You want the positive to stay positive. And the other part is that is there a way you can mitigate the process of creation of karma, which we do every minute, every nanosecond? You know, if I'm talking to you right now and you've asked me a question, in my mind, am I forming some sort of a judgment against you?
Right.
A negative judgment. Oh, what kind of a question is she asked? I've made my karma right back. Somewhere. Right. about me. Oh, Pushpendra does not know how to ask questions. He does not know how to write. And I'd be like, how did she say that? That's because I did that with you at some point in time. So
Right.
it's nothing but it's going to bounce back. So making people aware of the fact that the positive karmas, you have to be very careful with the positive karmas you create, because arrogance, ego, narcissism, anything else actually is far, far worse than just negative karma.
Yes, very true. Very true. Now, your book, Observe to a Mask, where can people find that book?
So they can find it in bookstores like Barnes & Noble. They can also find it on Amazon. And if they want an autographed copy or they want a copy signed, they can reach out to me. So and it's available across the world. And if they want to download it, it's available as an ebook as well.
And what is your website, so everybody knows your website?
So that's my first and last name, which is pushpendramehta.com. And you can also find me on Facebook at, Mehta Push. That's my last name, Mehta, and my short form of my first name, Push. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter. I mean, as long as you type my first and last name, my picture will show up. You don't, even if you don't remember anything, you know, that I mentioned in terms of the shortened version of my name.
Now, right before we go, I just want one quick question that popped in my head: intuition. Now, intuition is something that, you know, our body, our heart, our mind, you know, our chakras, we, you know, I always believe the heart rules over the brain, you know,
right.
The heart gives messages to the brain and the brain sends the messages, you know, to the body, you know, and you kind of, you know, your intuition, I think your body is always telling you, and it always giving you messages and giving you answers and direction. And I think so many people lack connecting with that intuition. You know, how do you feel about that?
You know, it's one of the best questions to my mind somebody has asked me, and you're so spot on. I'm not saying that because you're in front of me. The fact that, how do you recognize that? The body is telling you something. And you rightly said the heart is very powerful. And because, you know, what happens is that is intuition is really, if you break it down, it's taught from within. It's the inner voice. Whether you believe in God or you don't, but there is a voice. Something tells you, you know, connecting with what you said, the energy. The energy, there is a voice behind that, which is saying something to you. I'm not well. This is hurting me. Or, you know, I didn't like the way this was said. Or maybe, you know, I need to write this book. Or I need to bake the cake. Or I need to go get flowers. Something is telling you, I need to do this for somebody or just do this for myself. But what happens is we are so caught up in the external world with worry, concerns, negative thoughts, insecurities, that we drown ourselves to our inner voice.
Yes.
So one of the best things to enhance your intuitive powers, the starting point is, you don't have to, you know, different people say different things. I'm a great believer in meditation, yes. But if you don't want to meditate, you don't enjoy meditation, you want to close your eyes, or you don't want to even open with meditating eyes, one of the things you can start doing is practicing silence. Just don't do anything. You go for a walk, you go for a run, you're by yourself. Just don't have, for that 10, 15 minutes, have a phone on you, a book on you, a television on you. Just sit down with yourself for 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, maybe 30 seconds. Start with 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes. Do nothing. Just observe your thoughts. Let all the crazy thoughts in the world come and go. Don't question them. Don't stop them. The more you do everything, the trash that we have within us, the trash we throw every weekend for somebody to come and take.
Right.
The trash that we have within us will start coming out. It's yeah. Only when the trash comes out will the positive thoughts. Something told you. I remember my first book, I was taking a train from Michigan to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw somebody, and I saw them, and they were engaging in a conversation. And something told me that, you know, that the other person is going through something, you know, terrible in their life. You know, obviously I couldn't have brought it up. I didn't know the person.
Yeah.
And I, something within that second told me, I still remember it was an Amtrak train, and something told me that, you know, you need to do something about it. I said, what do I do about it? And something told me, write about it. You know, so I'm not trying to promote my first book, The Game of Life and Relationships, You Are Prepared. But yeah, something told me that I need to write something and write about telling people they need to be prepared.
Right.
Not write for everything, but do something. And somewhere around that journey, I had a conversation with that person much later, and he said, you're right. But that was because I was, you know, at that stage, I was so in tune with myself. Yes, I was in a train, a busy train. But the outside noise, because I was spending some time with myself, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 15 minutes every time, day with yourself, at those 5 or 10 minutes, just make sure you have no other addendum with you, no book, no cell phone, no music, no television, just yourself. Just let your thoughts come and go. When you do that, you will become very attentive to the thoughts. You know, sometimes it's spontaneity. Something will come up and it'll say, you need to leave right now. You need to call that person right now. Sometimes it could be a reaction, but yeah, over a period, you know that was that a reactive thought or was it intuition? So, and then that intuition could come. There are people who, when they go to sleep, you know, they've had a dream, for example.
Right.
You need to do that. People will say they brush it aside. Some people take that dream seriously. They may not remember everything, but they get up and say, oh, I got that dream.
Right.
There was a prophecy. So it was telling you something. Again, so intuition is not just what happens when we are, you know, awake. It also happens when you are asleep. It may also be when you're driving, you may, or in the shower, you get your best ideas. So more and more, you know, with that 5-10 minutes, whenever you have a time, you'll be, whenever you have, you could be busy, and suddenly, because you are calm from within, you are serene from within, because you are practicing spending some time with yourself.
Yes.
And the more you do that, and the more you try and be practice being calm and serene, and, you know, like books say, forget the small stuff. Don't lose your temper, or, you know, don't get irritated with small things in life. The more you focus on the small things in life and let go, and focus on your inner voice, the inner voice, whether it's God's voice, it'll start guiding you. And even if you miss the intuition, 10 out of 10 times, you miss it 5 times, 6 times, you get it once also and you get it right.
Yes.
It could change your personal and professional life, or change somebody else's life so much for the better.
Right. Oh, I so agree with you. I so agree with you. Now, you have more than one book out. You have several books that you've written. Can we find that all on your website?
Yeah, you could find, perhaps not all, but you could find the first one, which is The Game of Life and Relationships, If You Are Prepared, which has also come out in different versions as Win the Battles of Life and Relationships. You can find Observe to Unmask 100 Small Things to Know People Better. You can also find The Suitable Inheritor, which is a novel that I've written, which spans Chicago, Peru, and India. And it's an inspirational, spiritual, romantic novel. And I've been told by people who've read it, particularly a few people in the media business, and more importantly, the entertainment business, that it needs to be adapted into a Hollywood movie. A Hollywood production company had also got in touch with me to adapt into a movie.
Excellent.
So let's see where we go with that. But so there is on if and if you don't want to visit my website, it's also available, you know, on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Amazon is, I think, the place where you get the best price.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been a pleasure, Pushpendra. I love, you know, speaking with you, and you are a wonderful person with such amazing insight. And I thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your views and sharing your insight with everybody, because it was very meaningful. And I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of good insight from what you had to say today.
Oh, thank you, Stacey. I cannot thank you enough. This has been one of the most interesting conversations I've had because of what you just said. It's been more of heart, you know, the conversations. It's not been rehearsed. And I felt your questions is what made the interview interesting. Some of the questions you asked me were downright brilliant, very, very thought-provoking. So I've really enjoyed my conversation with you. I follow your work. I follow your website and every content that you put out, including, you know, I think you're doing a great you know, a great service to people, you know, interviewing people and your podcast and the content you put out. And I really hope, not because, you know, this is an opportunity for me to be interviewed, I just feel that I hope that, you know, more and more people read your books, visit your website, and take advice from you, listen to whatever you have to say when you are on your speaking circuit, and more importantly, also listen to, you know, your podcast. Thank you so much. It's absolutely an honor and a privilege. I appreciate it. So nice of you.
Oh, thank you so much. Those words mean so much to me. And I, you know, the same goes to you. You know, I've been following your work for years as well. And you have come out with such wonderful pieces. And I love all the stuff that you do. And you really have some life-changing articles and books and so many things out there that people can really benefit from. And your words of wisdom and your insight is very meaningful. And I think it could, if people really take the time to read your content and to read your books, I think it could be a life-changing moment for individuals.
Oh, that's so kind and so nice of you. Thank you for your generosity. And you know, that's so nice of you. I had a wonderful time and a wonderful conversation.
Same here. Thank you so much for coming on this show. And I look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Oh, absolutely. It'll be an honor and delight. Please do. Thank you so much. And hope to see you sometime in person as well.
Yes, same here. You have a great day.
You too. Have a wonderful week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.